We have 2 years to save the world. That's a dire warning by the UN climate chief, who says we still have a chance to make greenhouse gas emissions tumble. Simon Steele's dire warning in London is this. He says, I'll be candid, blame shifting is not a strategy. Listen in to what he said.
Some of you may think the title of today's event is overly dramatic, melodramatic even. So let me start by explaining why the next 2 years are so essential in saving the planet. First, we know the stakes. You've heard me talk about time and time again the shattering heat and massive damage that climate change is causing to our economies, and how there is no room for half measures. Let's take all of that as a given. Second, we are at the start of a race which will determine the biggest winners in a new clean energy economy.
Well, joining us now, Dr. Arunabh Ghosh, we're also joined by Abhilash Mohanty, both climate experts. Thank you both very much for being with us. Dr. Ghosh, let me come to you first. What's really made headlines from the UN climate change expert chief over there is that two-year period, that we have to start fixing things in 2 years or it could be catastrophic. Why the number of 2 years? Why is that imperative?
Vishnu, we are breaching every month at least 1 percentage point or more of the remaining global carbon space. So within 100 months, the remaining global carbon space that keeps us within 1.5C is going to get breached. But what we are seeing already is the kind of extreme weather events that are occurring. In India, 3/4 of our districts are now hotspots for extreme climate events. We see that 11% of our tehsils, the sub-district administration, are now seeing a reduction in their precipitation. These are all signs that the climate crisis is very much upon us. Why the next 2 years? It's because we've got to peak the emissions and start bending the curve down, similar to the pandemic. You can't let the emissions keep going up. You need to peak it, plateau it, and then pull the curve down. And that's why it is now the acuteness of the crisis is coming up against the chronic nature of the climate challenge that we all face.
Abhinash, where exactly are we from a global standpoint? Because this is a global story in terms of capping emissions. It just seems unrealistic to expect this to take place in the next 2 years, let alone it actually coming down. Abhinash, can you hear me?
Sorry, Vishnu, I don't think I can hear you.
All right, we'll come back to him in a moment. Would you like to take that, Dr. Ghosh?
Yes, I mean, we've already, in a way, breached the 1.5C target. So what we are now looking at is perhaps 1.6 Celsius above pre-industrial levels. So when we look at these global averages, we forget that in tropical regions such as India, the actual increases in average surface temperatures are even higher. If you combine heat combined with humidity, say our coastal cities, there we are seeing 4 or 5 degrees above normal. So this will have an impact on human health. It'll have an impact on agricultural productivity. It'll have an impact on the integrity of our infrastructure. So this is why it is so critical. Now the question is it possible to start pulling the curve down? We've got to connect the global climate action to local action. And one way to do this is actually combining action on clean air with action on climate change.
Sure.
Yesterday, Simon Steele made the statement. Today, the Our Common Air Commission has argued that combining clean air action with climate action, with public health, with the economy, actually delivers more than 30 times the return on investment compared to each dollar invested.
Yeah.
So how do we get the World Bank, which is going to meet for its spring meetings next week, to start thinking about investing in clean energy infrastructure, clean transportation infrastructure, clean air investments that then yield the climate benefits? The citizens will then begin to see the return on that investment and the change in their lifestyles much sooner than getting to net zero. That's the connection we need to make between the local action, local delivery, and the global change that we all seek.
Abhinash, just a couple of days back, there was this very important verdict in the Supreme Court which said that we have a right to clean air and we have a right against climate change as well. How important is it that we start talking about clean air and climate change in the same breath?
Good evening, Vishnu. And so first of all, we have a right to the climate information. And the climate information in the current stage is more of a debate that goes with the elite class, more with the researchers, practitioners, scientists, policymakers at a very high level. We haven't been able to translate the climate information, the jargon, graphs, maps, or the IPCC warnings into a citizen-friendly language. And that's where the problem is. And the problem lies not just with the data or the information, there are enough data and information, but what it needs is converting it into a palatable format. Now, for example, if there is a 40-degree temperature outside, then whether my family's health budget is going to improve or increase substantially, or is there going to be a dent in my wallet, or how exactly am I going to respond to it? Unless we make it into that daily or common language friendly, I think the gap is always going to be there. We will be always coming up with these deadlines. But what it is more important is to make this into where you can make people more and more participatory, because the action, as the fellow panelists just highlighted, that the action lies at the local level. And in order to make that action successful at a local level, what is more important is to take it forward in terms of making citizens aware of how bad it is. And at the same time, while it is very bad, how they can prepare themselves at citizen level, at individual sure. level, at community level, and more importantly, at the larger policy landscape level. Yeah.
Dr. Ghosh, the fact that unfortunately neither clean air or climate change is an election issue. I mean, it might be casually mentioned by some political leaders here and there. Is that not a central failing that you don't win votes on the basis of not talking about, clean air or climate change? And unless it becomes a political agenda, it's essentially at one level a lost cause.
Vishnu, I think we have to start thinking about the environmental dimension from an economic perspective. Air pollution, of course, is a liability, but clean air is also an economic asset. This is what the Our Common Air Commission is saying. So when we see that in emerging economies, air pollution increase results in reduction in foreign direct investment, when we see that you have lost mandates in terms of the workforce, then it has a direct economic impact. Ground level ozone has a direct economic impact in terms of agricultural productivity. So I think these issues will become a political agenda when, number one, we stop a blame game and focus on the solutions. Number two, when we see the economic dimension and not just the environmental dimension. And number three, when we get the political leaders and the policymakers to see the solutions that are possible, because just blaming them is also not enough. And that's why a coalition of multilateral development banks, national financial institutions, policymakers, political leaders that are focused on solving the problem can very quickly start yielding or accruing the political benefits as well, because your productivity goes up, your agriculture productivity goes up, your construction industry starts booming again, your transportation sector starts transforming, your energy sector starts transforming. These are hard economic outcomes in a positive way that sure. an agenda that combines climate and clean air can deliver.
Abhinash, and I think this is important for our audience, how is climate change already upon us in India? Through specific examples, can you explain to us how it's already here and affecting lives?
If we look at how climate change has spanned or how it's going to impact, then as you rightly said, climate change is upon India. With at least at a district level, the climate change is impacting, and more than 3/4 of Indian districts are extreme event hotspots. But what is more important is the overall risk landscape is also changing. That is, traditional flood prone areas are becoming drought prone. But at the same time, in terms of heat wave, we are currently working in terms of understanding or developing the heat wave index at a sub-district level. And some of the preliminary findings are that suggests that the heat wave is going to be a larger problem for many of the districts in India. In fact, at a sub-district level, this is going to be impact more. Now, if heat wave or the extreme events are already impacting us, and there were studies where almost in a frequency of every 5 days, we faced one or the other kind of extreme event across India. And that's where a 1:5 is a big number. I mean, it might not be affecting because of the larger, might not be affecting us always, but someone somewhere is always getting impacted. That's number one. Number two is because it is getting impacted, our supply chains are getting disrupted. More importantly, if we are looking at heat wave as a larger problem or a heat stress as a larger problem, then while the net zero targets have been put out, are there enough power to light our fans?
No, absolutely. And these are all critical issues. And it's not just
where the transition.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's all around us, whether it is cyclones now with greater intensity in the oceans, whether it is a greater melt in the glaciers in the Himalayas, droughts in some areas, floods in other areas. It's all linked. I'm only interrupting because I'm out of time. But thank you once again as we on NDTV continue to highlight this issue over and over again.